97.5 The Fanatic.
Yeah, let the big dog hunt. Good morning, everybody. Happy Sunday to you. It's February 23rd, 2020. It's Joe Stajak here. I'm here till noon. I'm actually broadcasting live, not from the Xfinity studio today, but from the Wells Fargo Center, home of Le Flair and Le Sixer. 43rd Flyers Wives Carnival today, starting at 11 o'clock. I think it goes from 11 to 3. Talk to Zach Hill, my man, the PR guy from the Flyers. He's going to try to bring me guests in while I'm here for my duration. Jason Martinez coming up at noon. He's now a Flyer employee. So we're going to get into the Flyers a little bit because we don't talk about them that much. We just don't. But they're on a roll right now. They've won 7 of 10. They've won 3 straight. They beat the Jets yesterday 4-2. A couple goals by Scotty Lawton, Sean Couturier, and Tyler Pitlick. Enough to give Carter Hart the win. So the Flyers are 3 points out of first in the Metropolitan Division because both the Capitals and Penguins lost last night. Penguins lost 5-2 to the Sabres, and the Caps lost 3-2 to the Devils. Despite Ovi, Alexander Ovechkin getting his 700th goal in typical Ovi style, one-timer from the top of the right slot, right circle, and just blew one by the goaltender for number 700. I think he's now eighth in the all-time goal-scoring list, so congratulations to Alexander Ovechkin, but no points by the Penguins or the Capitals last night, so the Flyers still remain 3 points out of first in the Metro Division. Like I said, they won 3 straight. They beat the Blue Jackets twice this week, 5-1 on Tuesday, and then Thursday, and a big come-from-behind win against the Blue Jackets on Thursday, 4-3. They were down 3-1 in that game, and Kevin Hayes got the goal in overtime to beat the Blue Jackets. So Flyers on a roll right now, and we usually don't get into them until about April when they're kicking it. If they are right now, they have 35 wins. And in 62 games, it's the quickest they've gotten to 35 wins since 2010, 2011, where they got there in 53 games. And in those 53 games, they ended up with 47 wins, 106 points, and they beat the Sabres in a playoff series that year. That's as far as they went. The Bruins knocked them out in the next round. The Flyers, that was the year after they went to the finals against the Blackhawks, came back for one playoff victory, but they had 47 wins that year, 106 points. Flyers came into yesterday's action with a 79.6% chance of making the playoffs. How about that? I'm pumped. I'm pumped to see playoff hockey back here in this town. Haven't seen a playoff win since, when was the last playoff win? Can't even remember. It's been back 2011 against the Sabres. That's right. They beat the Penguins in 2012. Thank you very much. Penguins in 2012. So it's been a while. It's been a long time. So we're going to have some guests coming up throughout the show. Crowd is starting to pile in. We have the Mites piling in right now. Lots of good action down here today. It's a great, great event. The Flyers Wives Carnival, number 43. Can you believe it? Of course, I'm getting, if you can hear that, I'm getting text messages from Zach Hill telling me he will be doing his best to bring me some guests today. We're also going to be talking about the 76ers. I called it, not to give myself a pat on the back, but I was with Rob Motti yesterday. He said, what do you think? He said he thought it would be a close game. Sixers have a chance to win. I thought they'd get smoked. They did get smoked. They lost to the Bucks 119-98. It wasn't even that close. So they are still in fifth place, a half game in front of the Pacers in the East, 13 and a half games behind the Bucks. That's a good team, kids. The Bucks are a good squad. I think the Bucks go to the finals, maybe win the whole thing. They got the Lopez boys, Chris Middleton. They got Giannis. Giannis is a beast, just a beast. 31 points last night. He's just a wrecking machine. Embiid only had 17 points, so called himself the greatest player in the world the other night. He goes up against Giannis and gets smoked. So Embiid had 17 points on 5 of 18 shooting. Giannis, the Greek Freak, had 12 buckets on 17 shots, 17 boards, 31 points. Bucks are 48-8. I'm telling you that this is their year. They almost got by the Raptors, had a 2-0 lead, and then tanked. Give the Raptors credit. Freddie Van Fleet, Pascal Siakam, Kawhi Leonard. Great job by them hanging in there and being resilient against the Sixers, against the Bucks, and then, of course, with Golden State. Of course, it helped that everyone was dropping like flies for Golden State. Klay Thompson, Kevin Durant. But anyway, the Bucks are a team to be reckoned with this year. Tobias Harris, 11 points last night, minus 28. Oof, there's your max player. There's your max player, went 3-for-10. That's your max guy. I don't want to kill Tobias Harris. I don't want to kill the Sixers today, but this is what I'm talking about. People think they're a potential conference finals team. I don't see it. I just don't see it. I think it's an extremely flawed bunch from top to bottom. I think they needed a coaching change. Sean Humpster, how are you? Seeing some of my old school boys here. Old school boys, fight the power. Name on the back, baby, right? Not the logo on the front. Oh, Kenny Adelberger's in the house. What's up, Kenny Adelberger? Wow, this is like a prison reunion here, huh? What's up? I'll catch you guys in a break. Who? Josh, he's not here today. We need him for this reunion, right? I'm sure this is a stimulating talk for the listeners out there. I'll catch up with you guys. Good seeing you, Kenny. Huppy, you're the man. Sorry, that was a couple of my boys from Prism, Kenny Adelberger, Sean Humpster, their cameraman. They're working the carnival today. But Sixers shot 35% last night. What a debacle. 35%. They almost shot 35% from three. Almost shot 35% from three. They shot 35% from the floor. Shake Milton and Korkmaz both had 17 points off the bench. Milton played a lot of point behind Ben Simmons, who left 4:44 into the game with a lower back injury that kept him out against the Nets in his first game back since the All-Star break. Here we go again. Guys playing in the All-Star game. I'm not saying it was related to that, but Embiid missed 8 games out of the All-Star game last year. Ben Simmons has now missed basically 2 games since the All-Star break. I think they should be banned from playing in the All-Star game, any Sixer. It doesn't do any good for anybody. I know it's fun for them. It's an honor. I get it. The elite get together. It's a fun time, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't help the team. And I know you can't keep guys out. You really can't. They are professionals. They're supposed to act professional. And they have the right to play in that game if they get voted into the game. And I can understand why they'd want to. It's the best of the best. Playing together, and boy, what a show they put on this year. LeBron's team and Giannis's team, LeBron's team won the game late, but Ben Simmons may be paying for that as he is out, and he's going to have an MRI on his lower back. He played, again, I think he played like 4:44 yesterday until he got yanked. Shake Milton took over most of his duties. Furkan Korkmaz, like I said, 7 of 14 yesterday, not a bad shooting day off the bench, 17 points, but the Sixers got steamrolled. Sixers got steamrolled yesterday. And again, they're a flawed squad. Whoever keeps thinking that this team's going to do some damage in the postseason or telling me that they're built for the postseason, I don't know what you're seeing. I really don't. What is it about this team that makes you think they're going to make a run in the postseason? They can't win on the road. They're 9-20. They're unbelievable at home. Unbelievable at home. I believe they're, let me check that, 25-3 at home. Ridiculous numbers at home. They look like a very good ball club at home. They look like an entirely different team. They look like a team that could make some hayway in the postseason, but they can't win on the road. You can't win on the road. You can't win in the playoffs. I know you only have to steal one to get home court advantage, but you're not going to win every game at home just because you're very good at home. You're terrible on the road. It's give and take. I just don't think this team is built right now to make a run. Ben Simmons hurt and can't shoot. Still can't shoot. I've been led to believe. I've been led astray. I've been led to believe this guy's going to shoot the basketball from outside 10 feet, outside 15 feet, three-pointers. This is, and to me, this is the coach. Teacher says, student does. Apparently, the inmates run the asylum because Ben Simmons decided he's not going to shoot, and Brett Brown, I guess that's okay with him, even though he insisted before the season that Ben Simmons shoot this year, and he was going to draw up some plays for him and draw up some three-point attempts, and it hasn't happened. And to me, that's on Brett Brown. You know, hey, son, you do this or you sit next to me. Simple as that. I know he's close to his father. He coached him when he was in Australia when he was a little kid. I mean, I think he's too soft. I think the team is soft, and that comes from the head coach. It's soft all the way down. Embiid is soft. The rest of the team is soft. No one has that killer instinct. They don't hate to lose. They accept losing. I know they like to win. Everyone likes to win, but I like the guys that hate to lose. I want those guys on my team. Give me the guys that hate to lose. The guys you see crying after the game. And I'm not talking about Joel Embiid. That was ridiculous. His effort was not commensurate with his act after the game, the loss in Toronto where he was crying. I just didn't. It didn't match up to me. You know, I need to see a guy who's leaving it on the floor every night and giving 150%, then I could see where the tears flow after the series. But to me, Embiid, he coasted through a couple games. He had the upper respiratory infection, you know, the common cold, walking into the game with his head down and woe is me, and, you know, not being able to play in one game and playing hamstrung in the other two games. Didn't fight through it like other guys have. Spit up game four in overtime, where he had a couple turnovers on a walk, which would have sealed the series for the team, I believe, if they had taken game four from the Raptors that night. But they're just a flawed bunch. I don't think they're built for anything. Show me a team that's won anything without a shooting point guard. I can't think of one. A shooting point guard. They don't have a point guard that can shoot. He gets to the rack, gets his points. I get all that. He's very good at it. He's a premier player. He needs to expand his game to be a more dangerous player. Right now, he's very predictable. And truth be told, it's hard to stop that, even though everyone knows what he's going to do, getting to the rim. I've seen fast players. He's one of the fastest players I've ever seen get down the court and get to the rack. Of course, he's got long strides, but he is fast for a big man. And he's deadly getting to the rack. I get all that. But you have to have another element of your game. You just have to. You have to have another element of your game, and he doesn't. And Embiid calls himself the best player in the world, gets smoked by the MVP, the reigning MVP, the Greek Freak, last night. I mean, the Greek Freak's a guy, 2 hours before the game, has an intense pregame workout. Intense pregame workout. Now, I'm not saying Joel Embiid and the rest of the Sixers do not. I'm just saying I know last night that Giannis was out on the court 2 hours before the game, had an intense workout, and he wore some special shoes to kind of recover in the locker room before the game. He's a guy who has that desire. He's got that killer instinct. Every night out, too. I know he only... What did he score? He scored 18 points against the Sixers on December 25th on that Christmas Day game where the Sixers won. Since then... Not since then, but in five other games Embiid has played in the Mike Budenholzer era, the coach of the Milwaukee Bucks, he's averaged in five other games under this coaching regime 39.2 points, 57% field goal percentage. Almost 40 points in five other games. He had a stinker on Christmas Day, 18, but in the five other games, while playing for Mike Budenholzer, he averaged almost 40 points in those five games. He's a killer. That's why he's the MVP. And to me, he may be the best player in the league. I know Kawhi does it on the defensive end as well. I'd be hard-pressed to take anybody over the Greek Freak, especially at the level he's playing right now. Don't be fooled. I wouldn't be disappointed if you gave me Kawhi because, you know, defense is half the game. And people say, well, he's a good defensive player. Well, okay, he's the best two-way guy. Well, yeah, well, the game does happen at both ends of the court. So why are we qualifying Kawhi as being a two-way guy? That's what you want a guy to be. You don't want a guy to be just offensive-minded or defensive-minded, and Kawhi does it on both ends of the court. That's why I think he may be the best player in the game, because that's what he does. He certainly was last year. But Giannis, I'm not sure who I would take in that situation. 610-632-0975, 610-632-0975. I'm Joe Stazak. I'm down at the Wells Fargo Center. Flyers 43rd Wives Carnival today. Cannot wait. Doors are, well, people are assembling right now, and a lot of the workers are getting things together, and the food will be open soon, and the cameramen are getting set. Jason Martinez will be along at noon. He'll have some more players. Zach Hill, I talked to a little while ago, the PR guy for the Flyers, going to bring me some players, I hope. Have some guests for you, because we're going to talk some Flyers hockey. I know there are some Flyers fans out there elated to talk about Flyers hockey in February, not April. Did a little bit of it yesterday with Rob Motti. Also talked about the 1980 victory by the USA over the Red Army team, the Russians, 40 years ago from yesterday. So we'll talk a little bit about that. I want to get a little bit more into that. The greatest victory in team sports history. The greatest victory in team sports history. I'll throw that out there. Yesterday we just did it as an American victory. It was the greatest American victory. I'm going to say victory, period. Victory, period, in all of sports. To me, it's the greatest upset of all time. Greatest upset of all time. No way they should have hung with the Russians in that game. But, hey, you run into a hot goaltender, and it's just one of those games. You know, that's why you play the game. Not just talk about it the day before. That's why you play the game. And on that day, for those 60 minutes, those students outplayed the best team on the planet. That's all you need. You don't have to be the better team. You just have to play better within the confines of that game, and that's what they did. We'll talk about that a little bit as well. Greatest victory you've ever seen, team sports victory. Greatest victory. There's a bunch I can think of. Also, greatest call. What was the greatest call you've ever heard? We'll play some for you, hopefully. Al Michaels had a great call at the end of that game. You know, the famous, do you believe in miracles? Yes. And then Ken Dryden chimes in with, unbelievable. No one gives him credit. No one even remembers it was Kenny Dryden, the goaltender for the Canadians, who won five straight cups after the Flyers' reign ended in 1975. But, yeah, he got saddled with that job, and he's like the unknown announcer. You know, Al Michaels gets all the bells and whistles. Then he should. I mean, he was the deal. Kenny Dryden was the number two man on the horn that day in Lake Placid. 8,500 people, that's all, that were in the building to see that game. 8,500 people. You go to Villanova, you go to their field house, they have more people than that. To watch that hockey game, 8,500, watched it live. We didn't even watch it live. It was tape delayed. How ridiculous was that? ABC actually tried to move it back to 8 o'clock where it would be in prime time in America. But that would have pushed the game from 1 a.m. in Russia to 4 a.m. And the Russians said, nope, not going to do it. We're not going to change it. We're not going to agree to it. So they kept it at 5 o'clock and decided to show it on tape delay. And which they did back in the day. The Sixers game in 1980 where Magic came off the bench. Not off the bench. He came in for Kareem and played center and had like 42 points and had that ridiculous game. That was a tape-delayed game. Crazy how things have changed. How nothing is tape-delayed anymore. Everything's live. And you get your information live. And I remember we obviously didn't have social media back then in 1980, but it did leak. I had heard rumblings that the USA had won. Had won their game, and so at that point, and it was so close watching the game, I'm thinking, maybe that report was true. Maybe they did win that game. But it didn't blow because I didn't get any details. It was just kind of a rumor that had been circling. And it's hard to keep that thing silent. You know, ABC was trying to keep it silent until 8 o'clock. They wanted people to be in suspense watching the game, but it kind of leaked. kind of leaked back, but we didn't know anything about it, and we all watched it at 8 o'clock, and it was phenomenal. I think I was in, what, 8th grade at the time? Was I 13? I think I was in 8th grade. Phenomenal. Just phenomenal. I'm so thrilled that I was around to see that, because it was one of the greatest sporting events I've ever seen, and one of the greatest upsets in sports history, maybe the greatest upset in sports history. Yeah, I mean, you talk about Buster Douglas, I get it, in Villanova, but this was amateurs against the best team in the world. People forget, though, they still had to beat Finland for the gold medal, and they were down in that game 2-1 going into the third period. Imagine that, if they beat the Russians and lost to the Finns. They got three goals in the third period. Rob McClanahan had a goal, I remember. I'm not sure if Jack O'Callaghan had one, but they won that game 4-2, won the gold medal, and Herb Brooks got it done. Craig Patrick, his assistant coach, became GM of the Penguin, did a fine job, won a couple cups with them. So it's good stuff. I always like looking down memory lane at that whole game, and just, you know, every time I watch it, I get chills watching it. I get chills listening to Al Michaels in the beginning of the game. Because he, I'll pull up the quote later, but it was just a phenomenal read by him. He kind of alluded to the fact that it was more than a hockey game at the time, because we were going through a Cold War with Russia, and it was a time where there was a recession in the United States, and morale was down, and it certainly lifted up the spirits and hopes of the Americans nationally after they won that game against Russia. It's amazing, because hockey's not a huge American sport. You know, people make fun of it. It gets killed. If you go on ESPN and look for NHL, it's down like 33 sports. You know, you have the NBA, NFL, MLB up top, number verse 3. NHL, you have to go way down to find it. Which is ridiculous, considering ESPN used to cover the NHL. Maybe they did that because they didn't retain the rights, and they're just like, well, we're just going to scrap hockey. But for that, for hockey, which is not all that popular in the States, to be the greatest victory in American sports history, which it is, unless you could find something else for me that I didn't know about. I mean, beating the Redcoats in 76, but that wasn't a sporting event. That was a war. I mean, that was a bigger upset. There was no bigger upset than knocking off the Brits. All right? But that wasn't sports. So we're just keeping it to sports. And the 1980 team did a phenomenal job knocking off the Red Army team. All right, we've got to take our first break. 610-632-0975. 610-632-0975. I'm Joe Stazak, live from the Wells Fargo Center, covering the 43rd Flyers Wives Carnival. Give me a call. We're talking Sixers basketball. You want to chime in on Le Flyer? We'll talk about the Flyers. Sixers got smoked last night by the Bucks. Ben Simmons hurt. We'll see how bad that is. Give me a call, and you can also chime in on the greatest sporting event in the history of the planet, seeing that the United States beat Russia 40 years ago yesterday. I'm Joe Stazak. I'm here till noon. Stick around, folks.
The Fanatic.
All right, welcome back to the show. Joe Stazak in the house with you from the Wells Fargo Center. It is the 43rd Flyers Wives Carnival. We're down here getting set to rock and roll. The carnival starts at 11 o'clock, goes till 3 o'clock, so get down here. I think there's two sessions. There's a nighttime session as well. I think Zach Hill will be along and bring me some guests. We'll talk to some Flyers. 6-3-2 against the five of the league's best teams, 6-3-2. So they play well against good competition. They've won three straight, 7 of their last 10, and they're on a roll. Pretty deep squad, too. Pretty deep squad. I just got a tweet from, because I talked about the greatest upset of all time. I talked about the U.S. knocking off the Brits. Dan Schwartz, 20, says, and don't forget that the Redcoats were minus 550 on the money line. Huge upset. I played a few props, too. Outstanding. Outstanding. Yeah, that was the biggest upset in the history of the planet. You know, a few farm boys knocking off the Brits, the Red Army team. And they had to do it. There was a faction of Americans that were okay under British rule. They were okay with it. They were fine with it. They were cool. So they were a little hamstrung. It wasn't like the whole country was fighting the Brits. Maybe half of it was. And still knocking off the Brits, the Redcoats, in that 1976 debacle. Greatest upset in history. But we're talking about sports. We're keeping it to sports. We're talking about the United States against Russia. If you want to chime in, because it is 40 years ago, or at least it was 40 years ago yesterday. And how about the call by Al Michaels? One of the great calls of all time and one of the great endings of all time. And I think my man Josh Rabick has it back in the studio. So, Josh, play that ending. Can't get enough of that. I got the chills just listening to that. Al Michaels, 40 years ago, still getting it done. Now, I've criticized him because he did the Eagles Super Bowl 2 years ago and was just god-awful. I don't know what happened to him. You can hear the excitement in his voice in that game in 1980. Maybe it's just because he's in his 70s and his calls. You know, you love to hear the calls of your team winning a big game. And I listened to every touchdown the Eagles scored in that game, and he was on like a down tick. Like even the Philly special, they're going to throw it to Foles and touchdown Eagles. He comes down, and even the last play of the game, I don't think he knew it was the last play of the game because it fell incomplete. He goes, and that falls incomplete. And the Eagles have just won the Super Bowl. Like it took him a while for it to register that the clock read zero. Like, I don't know if he's losing it a little bit. You see that with announcers a lot. Keith Jackson, it happened to him. It happened to Gene Hart. Happened to Harry Callis a little bit. You know, guys lose it a little bit as they get older. I get it. You can't beat Father Time. But he still seems to have all his faculties. It's just that the excitement, the energy wasn't there for the Super Bowl. And, you know, he's iconic. I love Al Michaels. And that was a great call in the 1980 game in Lake Placid. Only 8,500 people were there to see it. Can you believe that? That's like a mini arena. They have college stadiums that hold more people than that. It's incredible. 8,500 people. Imagine that. I'm going to the Olympics. You're getting a few you know, you're getting there some tickets to see, you know, the ski jump and maybe the luge, the bobsled. No, you know, let's catch some hockey games. All right, let's catch this game. Let's see, what is it? It's going to be game 6. All right, I don't know what it's going to be, but look at this. Turned out to be USA and Russia. That's going to be an interesting game, maybe. We're going to see how good team the Red Army team is, and we'll see how USA stands up. Probably won't, but, you know, it'll be a good gauge on where hockey is in the United States. You go to that game, and it's like the greatest team victory in the history of sports, the greatest upset in the history of sports. Just incredible. Just incredible. 610-632-0975, 610-632-0975. So we tried a little bit of this yesterday. We were on for just a brief spell yesterday, but greatest calls. I want you to call in with greatest calls you've ever heard. We did a couple yesterday. Kirk Gibson's home run against the A's and Dennis Eckersley when Jack Buck was on the call. This is going to be a home run. Unbelievable. And then, of course, I threw in Jim Nantz, the call at the end of the Villanova game I thought was a good call. And he's not known for his calls. So he doesn't do a bad job, but he's just not known for being that guy, the excitable. And he called it perfectly. And, of course, the game lent itself to the call because it was a game-winning basket by Chris Jenkins to win the whole thing. But so call in with your best calls of all time in light of the 1980 gold medal round. It was a gold medal round game, USA and Russia. They had to win that to get to Finland, and they played on a Sunday afternoon, and they were down 2-1 in that game. And I remember the story. HBO did a thing on it, and Ruggieri said, you know, Herb, at the end of the second period, Herb Brooks was addressing the team and says, if you lose this game, you will take it to your bleeping graves. He turned around, took 2 steps more to the door, turned around again, and goes, your bleeping graves. They went out, scored 3 goals, took the gold medal, took it from the Finns, knocked the Finns out of any kind of medal. Swedes got it. Swedes were the bronze team that year. Because the Russians killed them in the consolation game. So it was USA, Russia, and Sweden. Pelle Lindbergh's team. Sweden played the U.S. in one of the first games. Might have been the first game. And the U.S. they pulled their goaltender and had to tie the game late, like in the last 30, 20 seconds, to tie the game, give themselves a tie, or when all was said and done, they don't get there. They don't get to the medal round if they had lost that game. It was it Buzz Schneider? I can't remember if it was Bill Baker or Buzz Schneider who scored that goal. Kind of, I'm leaning towards Buzz Schneider. I will look it up. But it was a one-timer from the point that came from the left wing, right on his tape, and he blew one by Pelle. And again, the Swedes went on to get the bronze medal. USA went on to win the rest of their games. They knocked off Germany. They knocked off France. They knocked off Norway. And then, of course, they knocked off the Russians. Then they knocked off the Finns. And they got their gold medal. It was an incredible win. Of course, they made a movie out of it called Miracle with Kurt Russell. I've seen it a few times. Took my girls to see it. Not a bad movie. It was okay. Was it the best movie I've ever seen? No, but it wasn't bad. It really wasn't bad. I thought Kurt Russell did a nice job as Herb Brooks. He was a different animal, Herb Brooks. Different animal. When he coached the Penguins, you know, he coached the greatest upset in the history of sports and never wanted to talk about it. Every time he'd come into town, since the Flyers played the Penguins like 100 times a year, he'd always be around in February, close to the anniversary, and we'd always, you know, ask him, and he'd be surly and crotchety and dismissive with his answers. And the first time I was asked, you know, hey, listen, Herb's in town. I need you to go get sound. This is my producer talking to me. I need you to go get sound of Herb Brooks and just ask him about the gold medal game and the 1980 thing. I had no idea. This was my first introduction to Herb Brooks. I had no idea. I'm thinking he's gonna be off the charts with his assessment and his look back and reminiscing and how they got it done and some of his players and who stood out and who did. You know, who played the right way and whatnot. Man, he lit me up. He lit me up. I got thrown into the lion's den with Herb Brooks. He was pissed. Doesn't want to talk about it. All he wanted to talk about was Flyers Penguins that night. Just wanted no parts of it. He was a different breed. He died in a single car. I don't know why I think he was in a pickup truck. But he died in a single car accident in 2006. To me, the circumstances around that accident were a little fishy. I don't know. I wouldn't call him suspicious, but it was like it wasn't off like a dangerous road. He kind of drove off the side of the road and hit something. And I don't know. It was kind of weird how that all happened, how all that went down. But he was the architect of that team. The team hated him, really. Basically, they respected him but hated him, you know, and that was Herb's goal. Herb basically wanted them to have a common thread, and it was about hating Herb. He made sure that they hated him, so they all came together in unison to hate Herb Brooks, and that was the thing, and that brought them together as a team, and they, galvanized them, and, they went on to do their thing. But it was the movie was great. Some of Herb's techniques were great. Craig Patrick was the assistant coach. I remember Gary Smith. Gary Smith, if you watch those highlights and one of the goals, it was either Mark Johnson's goal to tie the game in the third or Ruzioni's goal. You see one of the guys on the side. He was a trainer. His name was Gary Smith. He ended up being one of the Flyers trainers when I was here at Prism, and I got to know him a little bit, and it was cool, because I'm like, along with Herb Brooks, you see Gary Smith on the end of the bench going crazy, and good dude, real good dude. I used to wear, like, Champion reverse weave sweatshirts and whatever, and he was obsessed with them. All I remember about Gary Smith is every time I would see him, he'd be like, where'd you get that sweatshirt? I need to get them for my daughters. Where do you get the reverse weave sweatshirts? Every time I would see him, he'd ask for these Champion sweatshirts. I'm like, dude, you're the trainer of the Flyers. You can't, I'm sure you have better access to to sports gear than I do. He's like, I gotta get her gear. Where do you get that gear? Like, dude, you were basically on the 1980 Olympic team, and you can't get a reverse weave sweatshirt quicker than I can. Really, I got to do this for you. Anyway, real good dude, and it was cool having him around and asking him some stories and telling us some stories about the team and some of their travels and whatnot. And that game they played after they tied it, I think it was Norway 3-3 in an exhibition game, and Herb hated the way they played, and he kept them afterwards. You know, when they even turned the lights off in the rink, and he kept them afterwards doing suicides. Just some cool stuff, and the movie depicts all of that. So if you get a chance, go see Miracle. All right, we got to take another break. I'm Joe Stazak, 610-632-0975, 610-632-0975. I'm here at the Wells Fargo Center for the Flyers' 43rd Wives Carnival starting at 11 o'clock. Get down here and enjoy yourself till 3 o'clock. I think there's a night session as well, so it's going to be going on all day here. Hopefully we'll have some guests along the way. And again, I'm Joe Stazak. I'm here till noon. Stick around. Oh, the same fantastic bump back music really gets me going in this morning. Oy, gotta change that. Joe Stazak here till noon. I just talked to my man Zach Hill, PR director for the Flyers. The gates open really at 11 o'clock, so that's when players will be getting here. So hopefully he'll grab me some guys before I get out of here at noon. I suspect Jason Martinez will have the bulk of the guests when he comes on to 12. I guess he's on 12 to 3. That's when the morning session ends. So, once again, I'm Joe Stazak here till noon. Get down here, Flyers 43rd Wives Carnival. Stop by, say hello. I'm outside of section 110 and 111. Having a good time with all y'all. Seen a lot of my cronies from back in the day. Sean Humpshire in the house. One of the greatest psychologists / cameramen we've ever seen. Anyway, so we're talking Sixers, we're talking Flyers today too, so we are open for business. If you want to talk some Le Flyer, we don't get a chance to do that often. We're also talking greatest sports moments, greatest sports victories. It doesn't have to be even the greatest upset, but usually they tend to... Jason is in net. Jason Martinez is in net for the shot on goal between 10:30 and 11:30 today, just FYI. Then he'll be back here 12 o'clock. To man the microphone until about 3. That's when the first session ends. I think there's a second session that usually is a night session. Oh, only one session today? My bad. Only one session today, 11 to 3. So that's it. You have 4 hours to get down here. Again, players will be coming in around 11 o'clock, and hopefully we'll get some talking about the USA and the Russia game 40 years ago yesterday and greatest calls you've ever heard. And give me a call. The greatest sports moment. Greatest sports moment in history. There's been plenty of them. I'm going to go with that game from 40 years ago yesterday in a little town known as Lake Placid. 610-632-0975. 610-632-0975. Let's go to Mike and Del Ranyo on 97.5. What's up, Michael?
Yo, what's going on, Joe? How you doing, man?
How are you, pal?
Hey, I got two things to talk real quick. One is obviously my favorite sports upsets or moment, and then one that I remember from a kid. So obviously, nothing's going to compare to what you picked, right? These are iconic, worldwide type stuff, right? But the Eagles winning the Super Bowl and that whole playoff run, being underdogs every game, was going to be one of the greatest forever for me.
I can't remember a more entertaining Super Bowl, I got to be honest. There was everything to it. Backup quarterback, Brady threw for 505. There was missed extra points, missed field goals, made field goals, comebacks, and lead changes, and fourth down conversions. It was great.
Right. So as a homer, that's going to be my one. But
that's cool. I'm okay with that.
When I was a kid, I was 13. It was 1994. Right, the Sixers were dreadful, but I was just a fan of the NBA in general. And I think it was the first time an 8 seed had beat a 1 seed. And you know, every playoff commercial.
That's the Denver one?
Yes.
Dikembe?
Yup, with Dikembe laying on the ground holding the ball. They beat the Knicks. You know, that year, I think that was the first year without Michael Jordan in the league, and I thought the Sonics were the team that I thought was going to win it all, right? Gary Payton, Kendall Gill, Detlef Schrempf, Sean Kemp, right? You know,
that's good. Good job out of you.
The whole, I remember the whole roster. I was huge back into it back then. But
so are you a big Sonics fan or just an NBA fan?
No, just I could rattle off the starting lineups and three bench deep for every team back then. I was
wow.
Really and man, just that image of the Kevin. But now they went on to lose after that. I think the
right.
beat the Knicks the finals. But from a kid being able to watch that live and being 38 years old today and still seeing that shot of Kevin Mutombo holding the ball for the playoff commercials. That was a fun memory as a kid growing up. But that's all I got, man. Have a great day. Go back.
Hey, Michael, you too, bud. Thank you. And I am, yeah, there he goes. Good stuff by Mike. He liked the Nuggets beating the Sonics back in 94. They were down, it was a best of five. They were down 2-0 in that series, and they came back to win to Kemba Mutombo, the money shot on the floor holding the basketball. Great win, an 8 seed over a 1 seed. We've seen that before. It's happened in hockey before. The Kings did it back in 2012. They were an 8 seed. They won, I'm trying to think who they beat. Who was the 1 seed? Anyway, they won their first cup that way. And then their second cup, they set a record because they first had to come back from 3-0 down over San Jose. And they had all won. They had all won games. They won 3 game 7s on the road. 3 game 7s on the road to get to the finals. And then they beat the Devils. They beat the Devils? No, they beat the Rangers. Beat the Rangers 4-1. Who was the goal? Martinez scored that goal, that overtime goal. No, it was an overtime goal. It ended in overtime. He beat Henrik Lundqvist, and the Kings had their second cup. But it can happen. 8 seeds over a 1. Doesn't happen too often in other sports. It can happen in hockey. You can get hot. Look what the Blue Jackets did to Tampa Bay last year. Tampa Bay had like 107 wins last year, and they lose 4 straight to the Blue Jackets. Dominated them, too. And I'm talking about the Blue Jackets dominating the Lightning. Domination. Knocking them out of the postseason. I mean, that was one of the great regular season teams of all time. But if you want to talk about some of the great upsets of all time, there was the Phi Slammajama losing to NC State in 83. That's Lorenzo Charles from Derek Wittenberg. Derek Wittenberg puts up a shot late. It's short. The game was tied at the time. Lorenzo Charles, no one guarded him underneath. He grabbed the ball and kind of dunked it for the victory. Jim Valbuena, you remember running around the court looking to hug somebody. And that was an unbelievable run by the Wolfpack. Great 30 for 30 on the Wolfpack. Back then, of course, well, the next year, Georgetown beat Houston, so Houston lost twice. And then Nova, big upset, Villanova over Georgetown. Some folks call it the greatest upset of all time. It was close. I'll still give the nod to the USA hockey team over the Soviets. But, I mean, that was the thing about that was that Georgetown played in the Big East with Villanova. Villanova had played them twice that year, took them to overtime once. They weren't afraid of Georgetown. It was just kind of another team, you know. And they were a deity that year, Georgetown was. No one would think they would lose to anybody. And Nova, you know, ran the gamut. They knocked off, who did they knock off? They knocked off Dayton by 2. They knocked off Michigan, who was the number 1 seed in the Southeast region. They knocked off Maryland. They knocked off Carolina to get to the Final Four. Then they knocked off Keith Lee and Andre Turner and that squad from Memphis State, who I believe was a 2 seed in the East. The Southeast, I'm sorry. They were an 8 seed because Nova was an 8 seed in the Southeast region. That's the lowest seed to ever win a tournament. They knocked off them. They had to get to Georgetown. After all that, after those 5 victories, you know, one came against the 1 seed in Michigan, and then Carolina, they had to get past Dean Smith's team to get to the Final Four. They were down by 6 at halftime or 8 at halftime, and they won that game pretty handily. And then they had to beat a number 2 seed in Memphis State. That team had, like, Vincent Askew, Baskerville Holmes, Keith Lee, Andre Turner. I mean, that team was loaded. And Nova beat them. 52-45, as I recall. A couple late free throws by Gary McLean. And then, after all that, they had to knock off Georgetown, the Giant. And they were 9.5-point dogs. It was the first game I ever bet. Took Nova plus the points. And they won the game outright, obviously. They shot almost 79% from the field in that game. They had to play basically the perfect game. They missed one shot in the second half. Now, they only took 10, but they missed one shot in the second half. Yeah, there was no shot clock. It was the last year before a shot clock, so that gave them a little bit of an advantage. They didn't have to play a fast-paced game. They could wait for their shot, and they did. And I thought Raleigh coached a tremendous game, even a better game than John Thompson did. But that team was loaded. Georgetown had Reggie, he was a freshman the year before and against Houston. Can't remember his name. David Wingate, Michael Jackson. What else they have on that squad? Ralph Dalton was not there. Of course, they had Patrick Ewing. They had a pretty good squad. Michael Jackson was the point guard. Great point guard. Great defensive point guard as well. And Reggie Williams. They had also a good player. Yeah, the Georgetown team was loaded. But Nova, they led at the end of one, at the end of the first half by 29-28. So they led by 1 point, and they won by two. So they won both halves by a point. They won 66-64, and they did that. They had to come back, actually. Terrell Jensen, a buddy of mine, hit a shot from the right wing. He was left wide open with about 2:35 left to give Villanova the lead for good. They hit a few free throws. Georgetown missed some shots. And, Nova made their shots. They missed a couple one-on-ones towards the end, but they had already built up a pretty decent-sized lead. And Georgetown couldn't make a bucket because Villanova was that good defensively that year. Anyway, got it done. I got to take another break. 1 hour down. We got two more left. One session today here at the Flyers Wise 43rd Carnival at the Wells Fargo Center. I'm outside of section 110, 111. Stop by and say hello. We're doing a remote from the Wells Fargo Center as the carnival has 1 hour to go before it opens the doors and gets underway. I'm Joe Stazak. I'm here till noon today. Stick around, folks.